everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and we are still coming down off of that high of a last-second win at Lincoln Financial Field. As the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues, I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 112. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to talk about the Eagles in this huge win against those New York Giants. Greg and I will talk about what the Eagles need to do to go out west and come away with a victory out in L.A. on Sunday. Next up on Scouting Report, I'll break down a young pass rusher that has really, really impressed me while watching the Chargers on film. And if you've been paying attention to that team at all, or if you've been following the NFL draft, you probably guessed that it's defensive end Joey Bosa. So I'll get more into Joey Bosa late in the show. But before we get into him, let's not waste any more time. I was joined by Greg Cosell for well over a half hour earlier tonight to talk about the huge win over New York and that upcoming bout with the Chargers. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Well, Greg, we've had about 24 hours now to come down off of this high that I mentioned earlier, off that Eagles' last-second win. I wish that I had a camera rolling in the studio as you and I watched Jake Elliott nail that 61-yard field goal as it went through. Obviously, some jubilation on our parts because it makes our week a lot easier when the Eagles do win.
It was nice. You know, it's funny. We talked about this, and I said it to you before the kick. What do we always hear from announcers when they come on games? They always say, oh, I was down on the field in practice, and the field goal kicker was making them from 65, even 70 yards. But yet you never see a coach put a guy out there for a 60-yard field goal. And I said to you, I would not do that. I would not go for the Hail Mary. I would put the kicker out there.
Yeah,
and Doug did.
No question. And the one thing that we've known about Jake Elliott is he has a leg. He's got the ability to boot the football. We saw that with that 61-yarder. So obviously an outstanding ending. It was a great finish to a great game. It was a great football game on Sunday afternoon over at Lincoln Financial Field. A great way to open up the home schedule. The Eagles go to 2-0 in the division. And we got to start with the run game. You know, obviously a big focus of everybody and all the talking points that were made last week after the Eagles lost in Kansas City and about the run-pass ratio and the usage of all the running backs and, you know, how they were able to get the things going on the ground. There was changes up front in the offensive line. Watching the running game back on film today, what were some of your takeaways watching the tape?
A couple of takeaways. Number one, multiple concepts.
Lots of concepts.
Which we saw last year, the times that they ran the ball well. We immediately noticed the wham concept, which was, I think, on their third possession where they started with the wham concept. I believe it was three consecutive runs by Blunt. Or there might have been a play in between, but his first three runs were all the wham concept. And the other thing that really...
Can you explain that wham concept for a listener?
Yeah, normally what you do, it might be similar in some people's minds to a trap where you literally let a defensive lineman... you don't block that defensive lineman with an offensive lineman. You kind of let him penetrate, and then someone who's sort of offset... It can either be offset in the backfield or... How would
slightly
you describe?
Detached, slightly like a wing
detached,
player,
almost
yeah.
Like a wing player, will then block that player. That penetrating D lineman, that's called wham. The Patriots used to do that an awful lot back in the early 2000s. So that's the wham concept. The other thing that really stood out to me was getting offensive linemen out on the perimeter.
Yeah,
they did an awful lot of that. And we saw the pin-pull concept a number of times where you would down block with at times two offensive linemen when they went with 6-0 linemen or it could be a tight end, and then they'd pull two. And normally that would be Kelsey and Wisniewski. But that concept really stood out to me, too. They got their offensive linemen in this game out on the perimeter quite a bit.
Were you surprised by the use of the pin pull in this? Because, you know, you think about, okay, they want to try. And think about this now, obviously, from an Eagles coaching staff perspective. Anything you do as an offensive play caller, you're trying to, A, leverage
right.
the skill set of what you've got offensively, B, or trying to also attack perceived weaknesses on the defense. And I thought it was interesting that that you saw so much of those perimeter runs on the outside. We saw a lot of those pin-pull plays, but then also the quick hitters with those traps
right.
and with the wham.
Right.
So
right.
a little bit of both. But it was interesting yeah. to see how often they went to that pin-pull.
Yeah, they used it a number of times. They used it as I said, out of six all-line personnel. Now, so much of that is formation-based, because if you close the formation to that side, then you're limiting the run support by the defense to that side.
Yep.
And then when you get your two pullers out, you have the numbers. And that's what you're trying to get accomplished in the run game. The run game is a numbers game. You're trying to run versus a defense that's either light in the box if you're running inside, or if you get on the outside, you want to minimize run support. That's why teams use shifts, motions in the run game. People don't think about that, Fran, but the reason teams use that in the run game is because when you shift or motion, very often the defense responds, and then you minimize run support to the play side.
Right, and you saw, just to me, like one of the big things that stood out to me was the communication up front and just the rhythm and timing that you saw working up to the second level. I thought was so good, especially considering the fact that you had that rotation at left guard. You had guys in Stefan Wisniewski and in Chance Warmack getting those first-team reps. I thought that was really good to see that kind of communication and timing with Jason Kelsey and with Jason Peters on that side.
I'll tell you what, I remember a run, I think it was Smallwood. It might have been 10 yards.
Yeah.
And
I know the player talking
Peters
about.
Did such a good job. You know the play I'm talking about?
It was
about?
The first play I put on my Eagle Eye column today.
Yeah,
it was an outstanding job.
Classic, because it was a classic case of what the NFL run game is. That was a crease. That was not a hole.
Yep.
And when you run inside, very often that's all you get is a crease. And Smallwood got through the crease, but Peters did such a good job with the double, but then he recognized that he had to go get the second-level player, or it would have been blown up, and he did such a good job from a timing standpoint.
Yeah, and you saw that so often in some of their zone principles as well, some of the stretch runs where the guard in the center would have to reach the defensive tackle and kind of leak up to the linebacker, where that first lineman in would hold up that defensive tackle just for a second, allow his line mate to catch up and kind of reach him, and then get up to the second level.
And look, we've had this conversation for a number of years. This goes back to the Andy Reid era, basically, with the idea of the run-pass ratio and the fact that the run game, because it involves this kind of coordination, synchronicity, timing, you know, all those words that are true, the only way that happens is to do it a decent amount. You can't run the ball infrequently, because then what happens is the O-line doesn't develop that time. And we always talk about the back getting into a rhythm. The O-line also gets into that rhythm.
Yeah, he had 40 dropbacks for Carson Wentz. He had 37 called run plays for the Eagles offense.
It was
offense,
about 50-50, so
52-48. It was very, very interesting to see that in this game. And you also have to give some credit to the running backs, because, I thought that all four of them, played extremely well, obviously losing Darren Sproles. And we could talk about the impact of that after this. But all four of them, I thought, performed very well in this game. You saw them not just pick up the yards that were blocked for them, but on numerous occasions, turning what would have been a one-yard loss into a two-yard gain, turning a two-yard run into a five-yard run, five into 10. That's where you can have a good run game turn into a great run game.
I thought, I made this note when I was finished watching, I thought it was Smallwood's best game as a pro.
Absolutely.
Without question.
No question.
Not just because of the running, although that was a big part of it, because he ran hard inside. He finished, and he also showed that burst outside, which we expected
and
when he was drafted.
Pass protection.
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Pass protection really stood out with Smallwood. I know we talked about when it happened, a play where he abandoned his play fake on what I think was a counter run. And he had to pick up the blitzer, which that is exactly right. I mean, he did the right thing. And then he showed some toughness sticking his nose in there versus some double mug fronts where the pressure came inside, and he stuck his nose in there with some commitment and some effort.
With the loss of Sproles, I mean, you're going to need to see that from Wendell Smallwood. You're going to need the ability to hold up in pass protection. He caught a couple passes out of the backfield as well, so we know he has that receiving ability. He was used as a receiver at times at West Virginia, split out wide and used in a lot of different ways. He's going to need to be that kind of presence for this Eagles offense with the loss of Darren
Sproles. He's a critical player now. He's a very critical player in this Eagles season.
Yeah, and I think also when you look at LeGarrette Blount and his role in pass protection, he also had a couple big blocks in this game, helping keep Carson Wentz clean to deliver the football downfield. When you have both guys that are able to hold in pass protection, that keeps you less predictable. You can be a little bit more varied in terms of how you use your personnel groupings. And now it's not third and short or third and long, and you only have LeGarrette Blount in the game in certain situations, or you only have Wendell Smallwood in the game in certain situations. It makes you less predictable.
And I think that's critical going forward. I think Blount's definitely going to have to play in some 11 personnel packages. That he's just going to have to, because otherwise, like you said, their offense becomes predictable. They know this. This is not news to them. Blount has done that before in the past. I remember last year when we were breaking down the Patriots, particularly going to the Super Bowl. Blunt had some very good runs out of 11 personnel.
Before we move to the passing game, you mentioned one thing, and I agree with you. I thought he had a couple really strong games last year as well. But you mentioned that this was probably one of the best games you've seen from Jason Kelce in quite some time.
Yeah.
What did you see from Jason? Obviously, the athleticism on display.
The athleticism was clearly on display, but I also thought that he held up well on those runs where he had to basically fight one-on-one, where we've seen at times he's really struggled with that. He's just that's not his game. He's not a naturally powerful guy. He's not a 315-pound offensive center. But I thought this game he really did a good job. And, of course, we talked about getting the offensive lineman on the perimeter. In that style run game, he's really effective because he's a top-five athlete in the league as an offensive center.
No question about it. There are a couple of those pulls were just outstanding. He was great on the Corey Clement touchdown run, where he was able to get up to the play side backer, run around the sixth offensive lineman in Vitae.
Yep.
Just outstanding. So a great game there from Jason Kelce. Thoughts on Carson Wentz? I know you and I talked about that yesterday as we were watching the game live, that we were both anxious to watch the tape of it because there were times where it seemed he was a little confused with what he was seeing, with what Steve Spagnuolo and that Giants defense were presenting with him. What did you see from Carson going back and watching the tape?
You know, there were a couple of times where I thought that throws could have been made, but again, since I don't know what he was told to do, you know, in the week leading up, because I think the feeling going into a game like this is we're playing against a championship caliber defense. We probably think, based on the first 2 weeks, that they're not going to score a lot. Now, it didn't turn out this way, but we don't know this. This is game planning going in. So let's maybe not be as reckless. Let's not look for the big play. Let's try to play a little conservatively. Let's take what the defense gives us. If you don't really see it or you feel comfortable, don't take a shot. You know, it's easy with a clicker when we go back and forth 10 times to say, hey, that ball should have been thrown. And there might have been one or two where I think you or I probably would agree that, hey, maybe they could have been thrown.
Sure. The one in the red zone to Alshon Jeffrey on the little spot route.
Oh, for sure. He just missed that.
Yep.
He just missed that. He didn't see it. He should have, because that's where the read was, but he just missed that. So it's hard for me to sit here and say, oh, well, you know, he should have pushed the ball down the field. Really, even at halftime, it was only 7-0, but the game, Fran, did not call for Carson Wentz to be an aggressive thrower. The game called for the run-pass ratio being what it was, and for him to be a little conservative, and if he didn't quite feel like he saw it, you don't pull the trigger.
The one big question I've got from a few different people on Twitter, and one that we got, and people are wanting to get your thoughts on it. Vince Arganeto on Twitter wants to know about Carson's deep ball accuracy. It's been a continuing question.
It's been a little bit of an issue.
The throw that he missed over the top to Alshon Jeffrey was one of the lone deep throws from the game. You seeing anything there, or is it just more of a every one of those throws is a play within itself, and there's a separate issue in each play?
I don't see anything from a mechanic standpoint.
Yeah.
I think he's just missing deep throws and needs work on deep throws. You know, we've talked about this season. He's missed some deep throws. He's been short. He's been long. He's not even giving his receivers a chance. That's the issue.
Yeah.
I mean, deep throws, it's great if they're perfect, and every once in a while that happens. But he's not giving his receivers a chance. And that's just work. He has to I hope they're working on that every day in practice because they need to.
Yeah, it's not an issue of arm strength. It's not an issue of physical talent.
No.
It's timing and also the accuracy end of it, like you mentioned. However, I thought that they ran the ball to control this game, but they needed to throw it to win it. And they were able to do that with that final drive. It was second down and 10, right before midfield. I think they were at their 38-yard line. They call a three-level stretch with 7 seconds left on the clock.
Right.
And Carson makes a great throw, play to get the first down, get them out of bounds with 1 second left, and set up the field goal.
And that's where you had to be aggressive. See, I don't think he has a problem being aggressive. I think that's in his nature. That throw, because the point is, let's say the throw is incomplete. Let's say it's even intercepted. It's going to be intercepted going out of bounds.
Yep.
So, no, that was a throw where you have to make that throw. And as you and I discussed, I'm not sure what Eli Apple was thinking by jumping the underneath route. That would have been a 5-yard gain. But, hey, he stuck it in there.
Yeah, no question. And like you mentioned, that throw needed to go to Alshon Jeffrey. It wasn't going over the top to Torrey Smith. That's not the call. The call is to go to Alshon Jeffrey on the intermediate route. And it wasn't – we were talking yesterday. That's a high. It ended up being a high-low read on Eli
Apple. Right, right,
right. But really, for Carson Wentz, it's not even a high-low read.
No,
It's got to go to the high route. It's going to Alshon Jeffery on that play. So a really impressive throw.
Just one final thought talking about Carson Wentz. Assuming that what we were talking about a moment ago is true about the way to play that game given the nature of the opponent, I think, to me, that's more of what I think about when I think about game manager and game management. Hmm. Because games like that, you're not going to throw for a lot of yards because it's built into the structure of how you're playing. They were not attacking very often at the intermediate and vertical levels with their routes yesterday, you know, on Sunday. So that, to me, is an example where you go into a game, you're going to take what they give you, you're going to run the ball, you're not going to force it. If something's there, you take it. But it's a game where you have to play under control and kind of manage the whole game through the game. And it's not because you don't have talent or the way most people think about game manager. It's playing a game a certain way. In fact, just to go back to, because you and I both watched this game carefully in preparation for the Giants game, it's what Matthew Stafford did against the Giants the week before.
That's a good point.
You know, he only threw for 120, whatever the yardage total was. But the game played out.
You would never call Matthew Stafford a game manager.
No, but that game played out where you don't try to make stick throws. You don't have to. And you play each game to win that game. Now, obviously, the fourth quarter was an unexpected fourth quarter from the standpoint of the Giants' offense and the Eagles' defense. And it changed the game. But up until that point, I mean, the Giants had no points when the third quarter ended.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're playing that game to win that game.
Well, let's get into that phase of the game.
Right.
What were your thoughts watching the Eagles' defense against the Giants?
I thought the Giants came out with a great approach to protect their O-line.
Negate the pass rush,
you know, because it was all quick game. Three-step drop, quick five. A three-step drop, you don't even need blockers, and no one will hit the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, a five-step drop, a second-level player won't get there even if he's clean.
Yep.
So they did the right thing by their approach. Now, the Eagles, don't forget, they were missing a lot of people.
We're missing their number one. By first half, you're missing your best defensive lineman, your best linebacker, and two of your top three defensive backs.
Correct.
And a lot of depth in the secondary
right.
as well.
Right. So it's Douglas making his first start, right?
Yep.
He didn't start the week
Correct.
Before. It's Maragos, who is – he's probably a – I mean, he is a great special teams player, and he's a great guy to have on a team, but we know he's not a starting free safety. So that's what you're playing with. So they structured their defense to not give up big plays. That was the structure of the defense. And obviously it worked for three quarters.
And everyone's wondering, the big question is, how are you playing so much soft off coverage? Well, as we talked about during the game, if you're pressed up at the line of scrimmage and Eli Manning is going to have a quick catch and throw and you're going up against Odell Beckham, you're going up against Sterling Shepard, some guys who can run, if you get beat at the line of scrimmage, you're giving up a big play over the top on a fade.
Right, right. And look, Douglas is his first start. I think he was probably more comfortable playing off and driving on the football. We saw him do that a lot at West Virginia. That's really his game.
That's what he's accustomed to.
I think he can become a press man corner because of his size and his physicality ultimately, but he's not right now. And at the end of the day, you can say what you want. You know, you and I like Mills, Jalen Mills. I think he's aggressive. He's feisty. The one thing he's probably lacking is the kind of speed you'd really like to see from a corner. And we can sit here all day and talk about he should have been up in Odell Beckham's face. But, you know, that's Odell Beckham. and the last thing defensive coaches want to give up is a 60-yard touchdown. Now, they obviously gave one up in the fourth quarter. But it was not because someone was run by. It was a dig or a bender inside
zone
coverage.
Ridiculous throw by Eli Manning.
Yeah, and we saw him make about three of those to Shepard on those same kinds of routes. And, I mean, again, it was Maragos probably. He just took a poor angle. The completion was there, but it should have been, you know, a 19 or 20-yard gain and not a 77-yard touchdown.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the fact that it was just catch and throw for Eli Manning really negated that Eagles pass rush. And when you're a pass rusher, whether you're a defensive end or defensive tackle, and it's quick game, when you don't expect that five-step or that seven-step drop, it's tough to then say, all right, we're turning it on. Now this is where I'm getting home. Because it can get frustrating over the course of a game where it's catch and release.
And there were not many third and longs where they could feel like they could go after him.
Yeah.
So they stopped blitzing, basically. They played almost all zone coverage. couple, they played some man in the red zone, but mostly zone in the field. And the idea was to keep everything in front and make the Giants take 9, 10, 11 plays to go down the field.
Last player I want to ask you about before we move on to the Chargers. Michael Kendrick saw a lot of time because of the injury to Jordan Hicks, and you hope that Jordan Hicks obviously returns sooner rather than later. But I thought Michael had a good game.
So did I.
What were your thoughts watching him?
I thought he had a good game as well. Love the play he made on the Patrick Robinson interception where he was stacked inside, and then Eli did not account for him, and then he slid over. He read Eli, slid over, and was in the passing lane. He made some plays against the run. Let's put it this way. We've heard all through these years about how he's doesn't play with great awareness, you know, not that kind of player. I didn't see that being a problem watching the tape. Did you?
No. I thought it was one of his better all-around games that we've seen from him throughout his career. You saw him attack and split what essentially was a double team on a trap play where he kind of split the double, snuck underneath and made the play in the backfield. That was a play where his helmet came off on the tackle. You saw him get a pass break up on Evan Ingram in the middle of the field. You saw him make another play downhill in the run game. You mentioned the pass break up that led to the interception for Patrick Robinson. So ultimately a very strong game for Michael Kendricks, which was good to see. Let's talk about this Chargers team now. Obviously 0-3, not the start that they were hoping for with the new coaching staff on both sides of the football. But let's talk about this Chargers defense because they do what they do. This is an execution team. They're not a heavy pressure team in terms of
it's Gus Bradley.
Sending it. It's Gus Bradley. So it's the Seattle
three.
Pete Carroll tree in
terms
of
cover three. The old Seattle
model. Yeah, right. Of the four-man rush and cover three where you're not going to see a ton of blitzing, like I said. But they've got two guys on the edge that are pretty tough to make sure you account for up front. And Joey Bosa, who is outstanding, and I love watching him play.
Me
too. That guy's nonstop. And Melvin Ingram, who has really developed into a nice player as well.
Yeah, I remember him coming out of South Carolina. Really quick feet, really explosive kid. Has now developed into a really good pass rusher. Those are the two guys you have to really be aware of. And the interesting thing they do, as you know, Fran, is they'll move those guys inside as well.
Yeah.
And that poses problems because you get the matchup on the guard where there are athletic mismatches, and they also stunt. When they're lined up next to one another, they stunt, whether it's TE or ET. We saw a sack last week with an ET stunt where Bosa, the end, went first, and Ingram was the looper. And he got in without being blocked and sacked Alex Smith. But they're both really quick. Bose is relentless and uses his hands really well.
Yeah. This might be before or after your time. I'm not even sure if they had these when you were younger. But do you recall, like, those action figures? And they were, like, I know when I was little, they were, like, the WWF action figures where you'd push a button in their chest and their arms and legs would all go crazy.
I remember G.I. Joe more
did
than
they
that.
Do, yeah, but did they do that?
No.
You push the button in their chest. And that's like Joey
Bosa.
The guy's insane in terms of how active he is with his hands and feet. He never stops. He uses so many different ways to attack. And that's how he was at Ohio State,
And he's more athletic than I think. I don't want to say than I thought, because I thought he was a little more athletic than some people gave him credit for.
Yeah.
But I didn't necessarily view him as explosive. He's a little. He has a little tinge of explosiveness to him.
He's a really, really good player. And he's a player that the Eagles are obviously going to have to account for. We're going to cover him in the scouting report right after this segment. But Melvin Ingram, again, like you said, is a guy who can win off the edge, but then also win with leverage and win inside, much like a Brandon Graham. And then Corey Legit up front inside. Better player than I thought he would be coming out of Illinois.
I liked him.
I liked him. He came out the same year as I was at Temple at the time, and I was just transitioning here. And it was the same year as Muhammad Wilkerson. And I thought, there's no way in a million years this kid's better than Muhammad Wilkerson.
They're different.
So, yeah, they are different players. But Legit has turned into a nice player for sure inside.
Oh, yeah. And I liked him because I thought he was a true three technique coming out of Illinois. And then they have Brandon Mebane, who's your classic
He's still
one
a very
technique.
Good player.
Yeah.
Yep. No question.
So that's a good matchup for the Eagles' run game this week because their base, if the Eagles run out of base personnel, their base front is a pretty good front against the run.
And it's interesting. Their run defense in terms of the numbers is it's like the Giants actually last week where the numbers aren't very good, but I don't think it's because of the front four. I think they've got some other issues in the back end that are kind of lead to some of these big runs they've given up over the course.
Well, and also
you
had Hunt with the big run against them with the 2 minutes to go, 69-yard touchdown.
Sure. Yep.
But yeah, I think the question would be a linebacker because in their base they start Corey Toomer in the middle, Jatavis Brown outside, and Kyle Emmanuel is the strong side linebacker. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad group, but I think that you know, Brown is very small. Yeah. Brown's a 220, 225-pound guy, and he's basically playing stacked.
He's small, and he's almost always the last guy off the ball.
Right.
You watch the ball is snapped, and he is the last person to move, and so he is just a little bit late to
right,
get there.
Right.
When you're small and then slow to the ball, it's typically not a good
combination. No. So I think the Eagles, this to me is a week where I'd like to see them at least do that run-pass ratio again, assuming their defense holds up and doesn't give up points early.
Sure, yep. Yeah, no question. And when you look at in the secondary, losing Jason Verrett is huge because when he's healthy, he's one of the best man corners in the NFL.
And he was one of my favorite players to watch. Yeah. I really like watching him.
Yeah, so then you got Casey Hayward on one side and Steve Williams, who's been in the league for a while. Tell us about Steve Williams, the other starting corner.
Yeah, he played a lot last year because Verrett missed last year. And, he's one of those guys I think he can hold up. He's solid. Look, the reality is we know Torrey Smith can run, but the Eagles receivers, other than Smith, who certainly, as we said, can run by someone, the Eagles receivers are not really going to run by you. That's not the nature of the Eagles' receiving core. So, to me, Stevie Williams will hold up fine. And then you have one of your favorites, Desmond King, is now their slot corner.
Love Desmond King, and now with the injuries they've had, he is their slot corner, and he showed up pretty well.
Yeah.
They played a lot of zone this past week against Kansas City, but in the plays that I've seen, especially going back to the preseason, he caused an interception on a screen play. It was really impressive, and you just see that quickness, that physicality. He's showing up pretty well.
Now, because they're a predominant zone team, they don't match up a lot,
so
you're not going to get Zach Ertz one-on-one with Jahlil Adai.
Yep.
He's their strong safety. He's in the box. They're cover three, as we say, so the deep safety is Boston, Trey Boston, and Adai's in the box. That's pretty much how they line up.
Before we get to Phillip Rivers in this offense, let me ask you one question, because we know this is how the game works. This is how the NFL is. This is how college football is. As teams prepare to game plan for their next opponent, and so the Eagles are preparing for the Chargers, they just played the Kansas City Chiefs. There are some similarities in terms of scheme.
Correct.
Does this benefit the Eagles more in a vacuum, or does it benefit the Chargers more, having seen an offense that is similar schematically, and they don't have the same kind of speed that the Eagles
here's
do
how
like
I'd
the
answer
Chiefs
that.
Have? And so it's a little bit different. But
here's how I'd answer that. I don't think there are any surprises. I don't think there's a benefit one way or the other. Everybody knows what a Gus Bradley defense is. He's not changing his defense in 1 week. He's been playing this defense for 10 years or whatever the number of years is. Everybody knows how to attack and break down cover three and his cover three. So it's not a big surprise. When Doug Peterson and staff look at this, there'll be certain concepts that they'll say, hey, if we can get to this concept out of a certain formation, whatever it may be, we know where the voids are. Now, then you get into protection. You get into all the other factors that make a play work or not work. But they know what this defense is. Protection will be key. But they'll attack the cover three. We've seen them attack cover three.
Gus Bradley knows what the weaknesses are.
Of course he does.
Don't misconstrue what Craig's saying. This isn't a knock on Gus Bradley or cover three. Every zone coverage has weaknesses.
Otherwise, everybody would play the same zone coverage.
Exactly right.
Every zone coverage has voids and holes. It's just, can you get to them? Can the defense control those voids? And how do you get to them with your complementary route? See, that's critical. You have to control defenders so that they can't get into those voids and take away the throws.
So one quarterback that is able to do such a thing
in
terms of being able to attack voids in zone coverage is Phillip Rivers. He's been doing it in this league for a long, long time. I know you love watching Phillip Rivers in terms
Not
of
last week.
Done. Not last week.
He
last was, week was
He has about two of those games a year.
Yeah, he had what was it, three picks in the first four possessions.
Yeah,
I know he started the game with two picks.
One of them was just to the sideline where you just, Phillip,
Phillip,
what are you doing?
That was a bad one.
He knew it too.
Yeah. So it definitely was a rough one against Kansas City for Rivers, but one of the best pure veteran quarterbacks in this league for sure.
Really smart. I remember speaking to his former quarterback coach, who's a friend of mine, and Rivers sort of plays the game as more like what we call a pure progression passer. In other words, he's not necessarily throwing off defenders. It's more you throw who's your primary, who's your secondary, and if the throw is there, you throw it. So it's not like, hey, where's the safety? You're throwing, if your primary's open, you're throwing the ball.
Right.
But he's smart. He's aware. He's gutsy. I mean, I can't imagine him having another bad game this week.
He's one of the better quarterbacks in the league in terms of pre-snap and being able to orchestrate.
I mean, to me, he's always been the same as Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. He just hasn't won Super Bowls or played in one, so people don't think of him that way. But I've probably watched every throw he's made in his NFL career, and I think that Phillip Rivers is he's one of those guys. He's a tough guy to play against. He controls the game at the line of scrimmage. As I said, hey, I'd love to see the Eagles go out there and have a great defensive performance, but my guess is that Phillip Rivers will play pretty well this week.
Oh, the last time they came here in 2013, he was outstanding in that game. So Eagles fans should be aware of what Phillip Rivers can do, and he's been doing it for a long time. Let's get to the supporting cast. This is a team that felt they needed to go into the draft and address the receiver position. They went and drafted Mike Williams. He's been hurt, hasn't played. They addressed the interior offensive line. They draft Forrest Lamp in the second round. He's on IR, unfortunately. So two of the big holes that they diagnosed their offense with, they haven't been able to necessarily fill due to injury. But still some talented players. Melvin Gordon, who's up in the air. He missed a good chunk of the game last week against Kansas City with a bone bruise. We'll see if he can
finally got going a little bit, though, before he got hurt.
So their run game is very interesting because they do a lot of different versions of counter. They do a lot of stuff with pins and pulls. So the pin and pull this week he scored a touchdown off of, the same exact play that Corey Clement scored on against the Giants, and then just the other side of the field. A lot of counter stuff, and a tackle counter. You're pulling lots of different looks under center in the gun.
Well, he did a lot of that in college.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was really good. That was one of his best runs in college. So seeing him,
because he's a downhill velocity guy. He needs space, and you know, to me, I never saw him even coming out of college as sort of an outside zone one cut guy because he's so leggy.
Yep.
You know, he needs to be going downhill.
Yeah, he's an explosive back in terms of get him in the open field, let him run, and he's in good shape. And then on the outside, you've got, you know, Tyrell Williams. Keenan Allen, to me, is really, really intriguing. He's turned into a much better player than I thought he was going to be coming out of Cal. I liked him, but I didn't love him. But such a crafty route runner.
Really
he's good.
Good.
He's good off the line of scrimmage.
They line him outside, inside. He's really good in the slot. Got a big body. Catches the ball.
Yeah, they move him to number one, number two, number three. He'll play X ISO. He'll play as a Z, I think, most of the time. So how they use him is really interesting. Very reliable at the catch point. He had a play. It was third and 10, and he was lined up in the slot, and he ran down the seam. Caught the ball short of the sticks. He was pushed down the great press technique by the corner. I want to say it was the kid from Rice.
Gaines
gets him to the ground, and Allen gets up, catches the pass, makes him miss, goes into the middle field, picks up positive yards, and gets a first down. Just the kind of a player.
He has a
tough,
little Anquan Boldin to him.
Interesting.
A little bit Anquan Boldin. I mean, not Boldin was a guy unto himself.
He was a little bit physical. Yeah,
physical. But yeah, Allen has a little of that.
Interesting. Allen's a good player.
Yeah.
And then you have the two tight ends.
One guy you got to be careful about, though, is Travis Benjamin.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
He's the big play guy.
He caught that big one this week,
And he can run by you.
Yeah.
And, again, we talk about it, Mills. Douglas is not a burner either. I mean, they're going to take a shot. Rivers is an aggressive guy.
They will take
some shots with Travis Benjamin.
That's a very good point. And then, also, I didn't even think about this. Patrick Robinson actually played in that secondary.
That's right. That's right.
So there'll be some familiarity there. I don't know with Ben. I don't think he crossed over with Benjamin, but some of those other receivers there.
Yeah, because he wasn't in San Diego last year.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. But then you look at those tight ends. You and I both said the same thing in terms of their tight ends. We both expected maybe a little bit more 12 personnel.
Yeah, I did.
22 personnel. No, we're not seeing that as much. Hunter Henry has been hit or miss. He's had two games where he's put up a goose egg, and then one game where he was a huge part of the offense against
Miami.
He's
killing fantasy people.
He's killing me in one of my leagues. I know that.
Yeah.
But Hunter Henry is certainly a very talented player, and Antonio Gates is still – he's not Antonio Gates of yesteryear, but he's still Antonio Gates.
And if they do get into the red zone, that's where Gates is really a factor. And Rivers is good in the red zone because he's so quick with his decision-making. But, yeah, I expected to see more two tight end sets. Again, it's early in the season. We don't know. They're coming off a bad game. Maybe they tweak a few things. Maybe you see more of that.
The one thing I do expect is that this offensive line, you know, they do a lot in terms of chips and things to help out those tackles. It's not a quick throw offense in terms of like what we saw this past week with Eli.
No.
It's not a catch and release.
No.
Phillip Rivers
will
stand in there in the pocket and hold on to the ball. I wonder if the Eagles' defensive line will get back into a rhythm this week.
It's Cox. What's his
Day to day.
Yeah.
Day to day.
Aren't we all?
I know I am.
Right.
I can't speak for you. But
I hope Cox can go because I think there's some good matchups inside for Fletcher Cox in this game.
With the help that they give to their tackles, that should open some things up on the inside.
Yes.
So I think that could be a really interesting matchup in this game. Well, Greg, we will watch it right here from the NovaCare Complex. Appreciate the time here, as always, on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
All right, Fran. Thanks.
Great stuff from Greg, and you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That is just one way to support the show, but the other is to go into Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and give us a rating and even leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout-out to the folks over at Brotherly Love who went on iTunes and rated the show and even left a comment saying how much they love all of the in-depth analysis that we provide on this podcast with Greg. So thanks so much to Brotherly Love and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. We talked a little bit about this player with Greg, and I mentioned how impressed I've been with the relentless second-year defensive end Joey Bosa, and for that reason, he will be the subject this week in my scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so Joey Bosa, 6'5 and a quarter, 269 pounds, All-American, purebred pass rusher. His dad was a first-round pick by the Miami Dolphins. His younger brother, Nick, certainly looks like he's on his way to being one as well, a sophomore defensive end over at Ohio State. And Joey Bosa, to me, was one of the best defenders that I had watched in recent memory, honestly, when I watched him coming out of Ohio State. He was a defensive end in that 4-3 scheme. He lined up as a 5-6 and a 7 technique, stood up at times. He lined up in a 3-point stance off the edge as well, and he'll even slide inside to 3 technique at times, which he did at Ohio State. He still does that now with the Chargers, and he fires off the ball with good pad level and a really good first step, shows very strong play recognition skills. He reads the perimeter run play really, really well. He's a great contained player, and he's got the ability to sniff out screens in a hurry, uses his length to get into blocks quickly, and he's got really heavy hands to jar opponents back on contact. He works hard to stay alive on run plays his way and against double teams, and he's a good athlete. Like Greg mentioned earlier, he displays that quickness and that agility to win in space, and he's got the flexibility to break down and make a stop one-on-one in the open field. He's got great closing speed from the backside when he wants to use it. When he wants to make those plays from the backside on the perimeter, he's got the ability to do that. Very good closing burst there from Joey Bosa, and he's a reliable tackler, explosive hitter at the point of contact. He will look to punish cornerbacks and running backs when they've got the football. He's got the ability to bend and turn the corner against tackles, attacks linemen in a wide variety of ways. This is one of the things I loved about Joey Bosa. As a pass rusher, he's got a speed rush. He's got a bull rush. He can win with a rip move. He can swipe the hands of the offensive tackle. He can win inside with a counter. He's got a push-pull. He's got a long arm. He's got an arm over. He'll go speed to power. He does a good job attacking a throwing arm. He's just such a smart pass rusher. He'll disrupt passing lanes on his way to the quarterback. He was asked to drop into the flats as a coverage player. I mean, he was asked to do so much and did so much at Ohio State, and he does it now with the L.A. Chargers. And again, Greg mentioned all the stunts that they run up front. He's a really, really aggressive pass rusher, a guy that really stood out to me watching that defense on film. I thought when I watched him at Ohio State that he could continue to get stronger. He has done that. I know he's over, I'm pretty sure he's over 270 pounds at this point, and he has the ability to hold up pretty well at the point of attack in the run game. And there was just a history of some encroachment penalties, some neutral zone infractions at Ohio State. I haven't seen really that much of that watching him at L.A. So a guy that has been really, really impressive. I thought he was the total package coming out of Ohio State. And for that reason, I graded him as an immediate and longtime starter, probably best cast as a defensive end in a 4-3. But I thought he could line up in any scheme and win. He can win in so many different ways. He's competitive. He's athletic. Pretty much the total package, like I said, and a perennial Pro Bowl player off the edge. That's how I saw Joey Bosa. That is how I see Joey Bosa. He's going to be a huge test for this Eagles offensive line. Again, the Chargers defense, number 2 in the NFL with 11 sacks going into Monday Night Football. So certainly a formidable front paired with Melvin Ingram. I think the Eagles were going to have to account for those two pass rushers. Sometimes they line them up on both side or on the same side of the formation. So he will be a test, certainly, for Lane Johnson, for Jason Peters, for whoever is lined up at left guard, for the right guard position as well, and Brandon Brooks. These guys are going to be moved around. They're going to be active. They're going to be relentless, and they are going to try and get after Carson Wentz. So it will be a big test now for this Eagles offensive line. All right, so great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And one more time, please, take a few seconds, go rate the show, leave us a comment. Do not be afraid to leave a question on there as well, because I would love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.